One idea that came up at this year's legislative session was a proposal to address the housing shortage on Oahu by constructing high-density residential units on state-owned land in urban Honolulu. It was put forward by State Senator Stanley Chang, who found inspiration in a similar program run by the government of Singapore. More than 80% of Singapore residents live in low-cost public housing, and surveys show that more than 90% of those occupants are happy with their units. Stanley Chang's proposal, which he called Affordable Locally Owned Homes for All, or Aloha Homes, did not win legislative approval during this year's session, but lawmakers were intrigued enough to study the idea further. Senator Chang and a delegation of state and county officials recently returned from a fact-finding trip to Singapore. He spoke with HBR's Ryan Finity about what they learned.
Several of the key elements of this model are based on what Singapore does. And Singapore probably has the world's best public housing. It's certainly up there. And what they do is they take government-owned lands, they develop them with high-density condos in mixed-use developments, very tightly integrate them with public transportation, sell 99-year leases. They do sell them at a subsidy. The proposal that we've put forward would not involve a public taxpayer subsidy. And it would also deviate from the Singapore model in a number of other ways, but the fundamental structure is borrowed from the Singapore model.
Then you and several of your fellow lawmakers just returned to Hawaii from a fact-finding trip to Singapore to kind of look at how they do things. And could you tell us why you put together that trip and what you were hoping to learn by going there?
So maybe the toughest challenge of all in the discussions about the Aloha Homes proposal last year was getting people to comprehend that it is possible to end a housing shortage through an abundant supply of high-quality public housing. And so we gave PowerPoints, we held conferences. It was a lot of explaining, answering questions. And so I thought to myself, you know, it's one thing for me to talk about it, but it's an entirely different thing for people to be able to see it, touch it, kick the tires, and understand on a much deeper level. So we organized this delegation, which just took place last month in May, and we put together a group that included five elected officials, the heads of the two state housing agencies, representatives from the city and county of Honolulu, even two folks from California, folks from the public sector, the private sector, architects, developers, planners, construction, many of the different stakeholders, including all four counties of the state of Hawaii. We went there to really understand what it is their model does and also what we can adopt and what we cannot. Obviously, we're in very different circumstances here in Hawaii as opposed to Singapore or Hong Kong. But there were a number of really critical elements that I think the whole group walked away with, one of which was the idea that it is possible for the government to furnish abundant public housing for everyone, not just the few. Another really interesting element was understanding the way that these developments are planned. So the only way that I think we can supply thousands, tens of thousands of units of public housing from now until forever without touching agricultural or conservation land, which I believe is a core value of the people of Hawaii, is to really make these developments very dense. And what we saw in Singapore and Hong Kong is that density and mixed use does not have to be scary. It does not have to be unlivable. In fact, when you have a model that emphasizes walkability, convenience, seamless integration with transit and public transportation, you get really a quality of life that is as high, if not better, than anywhere in the world. And I think that we would be very lucky if we were able to redevelop existing urban sites that the state owns with this level of density, with this quality of life. And I think future residents would really love those new homes.
You mentioned that the Singapore program relies on public subsidies to keep the units affordable. Now that you've returned, do you think that your plan, which explicitly does not have a public subsidy, is that still workable?
I think the basic model of the plan should be an unsubsidized model, because if we're talking about a housing shortage over 10 years of 65,000 units, you know, that's it's a multi-billion dollar subsidy if we're talking about a subsidized model. And that's just something that we cannot burden Hawaii taxpayers with all of it, at any rate. Now, having really gotten into the weeds in Singapore and having had further discussions with a lot of the stakeholders here, I think what there is room for is indirect subsidy, for example, by helping to pay for some of the infrastructure, the sewer infrastructure for these new developments. That's, of course, on top of the zero cost basis for the land, the large taxpayer outlay for the Honolulu rail transit system, upon which all of this is premised and without which none of these developments would be viable, and the impetus of, you know, the state not having to make a profit. All of these things are kind of indirect subsidies, but I think ones that would minimize the burden on taxpayers.
I know your original goal was to bring individual units to market for around $300,000, and I'm sure that would adjust with inflation over time. Do you still think that figure is attainable after looking at what Singapore does? I know there has been some analysis from the City and County of Honolulu and the University of Hawaii Economic Research Organization. Do you still think that $300,000 number is the target?
Well, we've taken a look at the numbers a little bit more closely, and a previous draft of the measure had $300,000 as the target price for all of the units. And since then, we've revised the draft so that $300,000 would be the median price, so that, you know, up to half of the units would be more than $300,000. And that seems to be a little bit more in line with current cost estimates. But that being said, I think that the authority needs to have the direct incentive, and all the players, not just the authority, whether it's the construction company, the, you know, planners, everybody needs to have the incentive to bring the costs in as low as possible. I'm concerned that a lot of the public housing, that the affordable housing that we have today, the incentive is not necessarily to bring in the cost at the lowest possible level, because there are always more subsidies and tax credits that can be received. For these units, since we're expecting that the buyers are going to cover the entire cost of the construction and the development, they do need to be as low as we can feasibly make them.
Last year, this past year's legislative session, there wasn't the full proposal, your full proposal was not approved, but there was some money allocated to study it further and explore if and how it could be implemented. So now that you have this knowledge from the trip to Singapore, what issues do you want that study to direct its focus towards?
Since we're really starting a program from scratch that has no precedent in the entire United States, I think the study should really cover all of the bases. Now, that being said, there are a lot of questions that we get from the general public, from stakeholders, that seem to be particular concerns in this community. So one of which is, well, the 99-year leases, what happens after 99 years? Does the limited lease term make transfers and trades in the secondary market impossible or impracticable? What happens to the tenants or to the owners after the 99 years expires or as the 99-year deadline approaches? Another issue is the financing. How can we structure the incentives in such a way as to bring in the lowest possible costs, whether that's through a competition model, an RFP model, an RFQ model? Another issue is going to be planning. So we're definitely not going to have the quarter acre lot, the large yard, the three-car garage that has become the norm in suburban neighborhoods. But to what extent can we plan for high density, and how can we do that in a manner that is welcomed by the people of Hawaii and by the neighbors to these developments? We have to look at how people are going to be able, how the state can finance the development of these units, whether it's through a public-private partnership model, whether the state would front the costs. And, you know, there are a lot of these technical details that, you know, people, another big one is that we get all the time is, where is the infrastructure adequate and where it is not adequate? Can we pay for the infrastructure that's necessary just through the sales of the units themselves, or is a taxpayer subsidy needed? You know, those are just a few of the questions that we get all the time about this proposal. And so I think the study can drill a little bit deeper than what we've been able to do, you know, on our own. We want to get as much public discussion about these concepts as possible, because we're really at that stage right now where we can design the program that could change Hawaii for generations to come, for centuries to come, in a very fundamental way. And it is not as simple as cutting and pasting. And so we need to really get more and more into the weeds. And even these technical details, because the consequences are going to be so large, I think it's important that there be as much public consultation as possible.
Anything we haven't covered that you'd like to get out there or like to discuss?
You know, so I think we talked a little bit about the urban planning models that they have in Singapore and Hong Kong. And just to elaborate on that a little further, we do have these communities today in Hawaii, like Chinatown, like Waikiki, where you really don't need a car, where it's incredibly convenient and walkable, that within just a few minutes walk of your home, you will have access to grocery stores, to pharmacies, post office, banks, doctors, everything that you would need in your life without ever having to jump into a car or paying for parking or sitting in traffic. And it's not just Hawaii. If you look at Singapore, if you look at Hong Kong, if you look at the Latin Quarter of Paris, if you look at Greenwich Village in New York, the north end of Boston, many, if not most, of the world's most successful neighborhoods have this model of high density, highly convenient, highly walkable neighborhoods. And I think one of the real benefits of employing this public service, this public housing model, is that we're going to be able to focus our communities in such a way that we are going to have not just really high quality of life, but also lower carbon emissions, because we're not going to be emphasizing car transportation. It's going to get people healthier because they'll be walking much more in their communities. Indeed, Hong Kong has the world's longest life expectancy today. And I think it's going to transform the way that future generations grow up. Now, at the same time, we've seen in Hong Kong and Singapore where there can be very robust public housing and the private sector coexisting side by side, where everyone wins. In Singapore, in Hong Kong, you have private sector developers, some of which we toured, that offer very, very high-end housing, and they are able to make a profit, and they are able to have a clientele that is willing to, you know, pay the market prices in the private market, but there is also a public option. So it would be like an education system where there was only private school, and we're trying to introduce public school now. And public school and private school can coexist. And that's what we're trying to achieve with our public housing model. If we do nothing, I really fear that we are going to develop the issues that we saw in Hong Kong. In Hong Kong today, an estimated 200,000 people live in extremely substandard, illegally subdivided, rooftop, even cage or so-called coffin homes, which are no larger than a dog kennel. And for all of these substandard units, we're talking about units that are even smaller, just about as large as a cot, much smaller than jail cell. What was really eye-opening when we visited these homes in Hong Kong was that this is the ghost of Christmas future for Hawaii. It is very possible that we too will have thousands, tens, hundreds of thousands of people living in those extremely inadequate conditions if we do nothing. And I am not okay with that, which is why I think that this has to be at the top priority, the top level of urgency for our policymakers today.
All right. Well, we'll keep an eye out for your proposal in next year's legislative session. Hawaii State Senator Stanley Chang, thanks for the time today.
Thank you.
And Hawaii State Senator Stanley Chang just back from an East Asian road trip, talking to Ryan Finnerty there. Senator Chang wants to develop a public housing model for Hawaii based on Singapore's successful program. You can find all our reporting on his idea, including a story that aired on Marketplace at hawaiipublicradio.org.